she thought. The woman was back to whip her until she was bloody, back to take her to the magister. Tessa hurried across the room, seized the porcelain jug from the washstand, and then scuttled to the side of the door, the jug gripped hard in her whitened fist. The knob turned. The door opened. In the dimness, all Tessa could see was shadows as someone stepped into the room. She lunged forward, swinging the jug with all her strength. The shadowy figure moved as quick as a whip, but not quite quick enough. The jug slammed into the figure's outstretched arm before flying from Tessa's grasp to crash into the far wall. Broken crockery rained down onto the floor as the stranger yelled. The yell was undeniably a masculine one. So was the flood of cursing that followed. She backed away, then dashed for the door. But it had slammed shut, and tug as she would on the knob, it wouldn't budge. Bright light blazed through the room as if the sun had risen. Tessa spun, blinking away the tears in her eyes, and stared. There was a boy standing in front of her. He couldn't have been much older than she was, 17 or possibly 18. He was dressed in what looked like workman's clothes. A frayed black jacket, trousers, and tough-looking boots. He wore no waistcoat, and thick leather straps crisscrossed his waist and chest. Attached to the straps were weapons, daggers and folding knives and things that looked like blades of ice. In his right hand he held a sort of glowing stone. It was shining, providing the light in the room that had nearly blinded Tessa. His other hand, slim and long-fingered, was bleeding where she had gashed the back of it with her pitcher. But that wasn't what made her stare. He had the most beautiful face she had ever seen, tangled black hair and eyes like blue glass, elegant cheekbones, a full mouth, and long, thick lashes. Even the curve of his throat was perfect. He looked like every fictional hero she'd ever conjured up in her head. Although she'd never imagined one of them cursing at her while shaking his bleeding hand in an accusing fashion. He seemed to realize she was staring at him because the cursing stopped. "You cut me," he said. His voice was pleasant, British, very ordinary. He looked at his hand with critical interest. "It might be fatal." Tessa looked at him with wide eyes. "Are you the magister?" He tilted his hand to the side. Blood ran down it, spattering the floor. "Dear me, massive blood loss. Death could be imminent." "Are you the magister?" "Magister?" He looked mildly surprised by her vehemence. "That means master in Latin, doesn't it?" Tessa was feeling increasingly as if she were trapped in a strange dream. "I suppose it does. I've mastered many things in my life. Navigating the streets of London, dancing the quadrille, the Japanese art of flower arranging, lying at charades, concealing a highly intoxicated state, delighting young women with my charms." Tessa stared. "Alas," he went on, "no one's ever actually referred to me as the master, or the magister either. More's the pity." "Are you highly intoxicated at the moment?" Tessa meant the question in all seriousness, but realized the moment the words were out of her mouth that she must have sounded awfully rude. Or worse, flirtatious. He seemed too steady on his feet to really be drunk anyway. She'd seen Nate intoxicated enough times to know the difference. Perhaps he was merely insane. "How very direct. But I suppose all you Americans are, aren't you?" The boy looked amused. "Yes, your accent gives you away." "What's your name, then?" Tessa looked at him in disbelief. "What's my name? Don't you know it?" You've come bursting into my room, scared me nearly to death, and now you demand to know my name? What on earth's your name, and who are you anyway? My name is Herondale, the boy said cheerfully. William Herondale, but everyone calls me Will. Is this really your room? Not very nice, is it? He wandered toward the window, pausing to examine the stacks of books on her bedside table, and then the bed itself. He waved a hand at the ropes. Do you often sleep tied to the bed? Tessa felt her cheeks flame and was amazed, under the circumstances, that she still had the capacity to be embarrassed. Should she tell him the truth? Was it at all possible that he was the Magister? Though anyone who looked like that wouldn't need to tie girls up and imprison them in order to get them to marry him. Here, hold this. He handed her the glowing stone. Tessa took it, half expecting it to burn her fingers, but it was cool to the touch. The moment it struck her palm, its light dimmed to a shimmering flicker. She looked toward him in dismay, but he had made his way to the window and was looking out, seemingly unconcerned. Pity we're on the third floor. I could manage the jump, but it would probably kill you. No, we must go through the door and take our chances in the house. Go through the... What? Tessa, feeling mired in a semi-permanent state of confusion, shook her head. I don't understand. How can you not understand? He pointed at her books. You read novels. Obviously I'm here to rescue you. Don't I look like Sir Galahad? He raised his arms dramatically. My strength is as the strength of 10, because my heart is pure. Something echoed far away inside the house, the sound of a door slamming. Will said a word Sir Galahad would never have said, and sprang away from the window. He landed with a wince and glanced ruefully down at his injured hand. I'll need to take care of this later. Come along. He looked at her pointedly, a question in his eyes. Miss Gray, she said faintly, Miss Teresa Gray. Miss Gray, he repeated. Come along then, Miss Gray. He sprang past her, moved toward the door, found the knob, turned it, yanked. Nothing happened. It won't work, she said. The door cannot be opened from the inside. Will grinned ferociously. Can't it? He reached for his belt, for one of the objects that hung on it. He chose what looked like a long, slender twig, picked clean of smaller branches and made of a whitish-silver material. He placed the end of it against the door and drew. Thick black lines spiraled out from the tip of the flexible cylinder, making an audible hissing noise as they spread across the wooden surface like a directed spill of ink. "You're drawing?" Tessa demanded. "I don't really see how that can possibly—" There was a noise like cracking glass. The doorknob, untouched, spun, fast, then faster, and the door sprang open, a faint puff of smoke rising from the hinges. "Now you do," Will said, and pocketing the strange object, gestured for Tessa to follow him. "Let's go." Inexplicably, she hesitated, looking back toward the room that had been her prison for nearly 2 months. "My books." "I'll get you more books." He urged her into the corridor ahead of him and pulled the door shut behind them. After catching hold of her wrist, he drew her down the hallway and around a corner. Here were the stairs that she had descended so many times with Miranda. Will took them two at a time, pulling her after him. From above them, Tessa heard a scream. It was unmistakably Mrs. Dark's. "They've found you missing," Will said. They had reached the first landing, and Tessa slowed her pace, only to be jerked ahead by Will, who seemed disinclined to stop. "Aren't we going out the front door?" she demanded. "We can't. The building's surrounded. There's a line of carriages pulled up out front. I appear to have arrived at an unexpectedly exciting time." He started down the stairs again, and Tessa followed. "Do you know what the Dark Sisters had planned for this evening?" "No." "But you were expecting someone called the Magister?" They were in the cellar now, where the plaster walls gave way suddenly to damp stone. Without Miranda's lantern, it was quite dark. Heat rose to meet them like a wave. By the angel, it's like the ninth circle of hell down here.
The ninth circle of hell is cold, Tessa said automatically. Will stared at her.
What?
In the inferno, she told him. Hell is cold. It's covered in ice. He stared at her for another long moment, the corners of his mouth twitching, then held out his hand.
Give me the witchlight.
At her blank expression, he made an impatient noise.
The stone! Give me the stone!
The moment his hand closed about the stone, light blazed up from it again, raying out through his fingers. For the first time, Tessa saw that he had a design on the back of his hand, drawn there as if in black ink. It looked like an open eye.
As for the temperature of hell, Miss Gray, he said, let me give you a piece of advice. The handsome young fellow who's trying to rescue you from a hideous fate is never wrong. Not even if he says the sky is purple and made of hedgehogs.
He really is mad, Tessa thought, but didn't say so. She was too alarmed by the fact that he had started toward the wide double doors of the Dark Sister's chambers.
No, she caught at his arm, pulling him back. Not that way. There's no way out. It's a dead end.
Correcting me again, I see.
Will turned and strode the other way toward the shadowy corridor Tessa had always feared. Swallowing hard, she followed him. The corridor narrowed as they went along it, the walls pressing in on either side. The heat was even more intense here, making Tessa's hair spring into curls and paste itself to her temples and neck. The air felt thick and was hard to breathe. For a while they walked in silence, until Tessa could stand it no longer. She had to ask, even though she knew the answer would be no.
Mr. Herondale, she said,
did my brother send you to find me? She half feared he'd make some mad comment in response, but he simply looked at her curiously.
Never heard of your brother, he said, and she felt the dull ache of disappointment gnaw at her heart.
She'd known Nate couldn't have sent him. He'd have known her name then, wouldn't he?
But it still hurt.
And outside of the past 10 minutes, Miss Gray, I'd never heard of you either. I've been following the trail of a dead girl for near on 2 months. She was murdered, left in an alley to bleed to death. She'd been running from... something.
The corridor had reached a forking point, and after a pause, Will headed to the left.
There was a dagger beside her, covered in her blood. It had a symbol on it, 2 snakes swallowing each other's tails.
Tessa felt a jolt. Left in an alley to bleed to death? There was a dagger beside her? Surely the body had been Emma's.
That's the same symbol that's on the side of the Dark Sister's carriage. That's what I call them. Mrs. Dark and Mrs. Black, I mean.
You're not the only one who calls them that. The other downworlders do the same, said Will.
I discovered that fact while investigating the symbol. I must have carried that knife through 100 downworld haunts searching for someone who might recognize it. I offered a reward for information. Eventually the name of the Dark Sisters came to my ears.
Downworld? Tessa echoed, puzzled. Is that a place in London?
Never mind that, said Will. I'm boasting of my investigative skills, and I would prefer to do it without interruption. Where was I?
The dagger, Tessa broke off as a voice echoed down the corridor, high and sweet and unmistakable.
Miss Gray!
Mrs. Dark's voice. It seemed to drift between the walls like coiling smoke.
Oh, Miss Gray, where are you?
Tessa froze.
Oh, God, they've caught up with... Will seized her wrist again, and they were off running, the witchlight in his other hand throwing a wild pattern of shadows and light against the stone walls as they hurtled down the twisting corridor. The floor sloped down, the stones underfoot growing gradually more slick and damp as the air around them grew hotter and hotter. It was as if they were racing down into hell itself as the voices of the Dark Sisters echoed off the walls.
Miss Gray, we shan't let you run, you know. We shan't let you hide. We'll find you, Poppet, you know we will.
Will and Tessa careened around a corner and came up short. The corridor ended at a pair of high metal doors. Releasing Tessa, Will flung himself against them. They burst open and he tumbled inside, followed by Tessa, who spun to slam them shut behind her. The weight of them was almost too much for her to manage, and she had to throw her back against them to force them, finally, closed. The only illumination in the room was Will's glowing stone. Its light sunk down now to an ember between his fingers. It lit him in the darkness like limelight on a stage as he reached around her to slam the bolt home on the door. The bolt was heavy and flaking with rust, and, standing as close to him as she was, she could feel the tension in his body as he dragged it home and let it fall into place. Miss Gray? He was leaning against her, her back against the closed doors. She could feel the driving rhythm of his heart. Or was it her heart? The odd white illumination cast by the stone shimmered against the sharp angle of his cheeks, the faint sheen of sweat on his collarbones. There were marks there, too, she saw, rising from the unbuttoned collar of his shirt, like the mark on his hand, thick and black, as if someone had inked designs onto his skin. "Where are we?" she whispered. "Are we safe?" Without answering, he drew away, raising his right hand. As he lifted it, the light blazed up higher, illuminating the room. They were in a sort of cell, though it was very large. The walls, floor, and ceiling were stone, sloping down to a large drain in the middle of the floor. There was only one window, very high up in the wall. There were no doors, save the ones they had come through, but none of that was what made Tessa draw in her breath. The place was a slaughterhouse. There were long wooden tables running the length of the room. Bodies lay on one of them, human bodies, stripped and pale. Each had a black incision in the shape of a Y marking its chest, and each head dangled back over the edge of the table, the hair of the women sweeping the floor like brooms. On the center table were piles of blood-stained knives and machinery, copper cogs and brass gears and sharp-toothed silver hacksaws. Tessa crammed a hand into her mouth, stifling a scream. She tasted blood as she bit down on her own fingers. Will didn't seem to notice. He was white-faced as he looked around, mouthing something under his breath that Tessa couldn't make out. There was a crashing noise and the metal doors shuddered, as if something heavy had flung itself against them. Tessa lowered her bleeding hand and cried out, "Mr. Herondale?" He turned as the doors shuddered again. A voice echoed from the other side of them.
"Miss Gray, come out now and we won't hurt you."
"They're lying," Tessa said quickly.
"Oh, do you really think so?"
Having packed as much sarcasm into the question as was humanly possible, Will pocketed his glowing witch light and leapt onto the center table, the one covered in bloodied machinery. He bent down and caught up a heavy-looking brass cog and weighed it in his hand. With a grunt of effort, he hurled it toward the high window. The glass shattered, and Will raised his voice.
"Henry! Some assistance, please! Henry!"
"Who's Henry?" Tessa demanded, but at that moment the doors shuddered a third time, and thin cracks appeared in the metal. Clearly they weren't going to hold much longer. Tessa dashed to the table and seized a weapon, almost at random. This one was a ragged-toothed metal hacksaw, the kind butchers used to cut through bone. She whirled around, clutching it, as the doors burst open. The Dark Sisters stood in the doorway. Mrs. Dark, as tall and bony as a rake in her shining lime-green gown, and Mrs. Black, red-faced, her eyes narrowed to slits. A bright corona of blue sparks surrounded them like tiny fireworks. Their gazes slid over Will, who, still standing on the table, had drawn one of his icy blades from his belt and came to rest on Tessa. Mrs. Black's mouth, a red slash in her pale face, stretched into a grin.
"Little Miss Gray," she said, "you ought to know better than to run. We told you what would happen if you ran again."
"Then do it! Whip me, bloody kill me! I don't care!" Tessa shouted, and was gratified to see that the Dark Sisters looked at least a little taken aback by her outburst. She'd been too terrified to raise her voice to them before.
"I won't let you give me to the Magister. I'd rather die."
"What an unexpectedly sharp tongue you have, Miss Gray, my dear," said Mrs. Black.
With great deliberation, she reached to draw the glove from her right hand, and for the first time Tessa saw her bare hand. The skin was gray and thick, like an elephant's hide, her nails long dark talons. They looked as sharp as knives. Mrs. Black gave Tessa a fixed grin.
"Perhaps if we cut it out of your head, you'd learn to mind your manners."
She moved toward Tessa and was blocked by Will, leaping down from the table to put himself between them.
"Malik,"
he said, and his ice-white blade blazed up like a star.
"Get out of my way, little Nephilim warrior," said Mrs. Black. "And take your seraph blades with you. This is not your battle."
"You're wrong about that," Will narrowed his eyes. "I've heard some things about you, m'lady. Whispers that run through Downworld like a river of black poison. I've been told you and your sister will pay handsomely for the bodies of dead humans, and you don't mind much how they get that way."
"Such a fuss over a few mundanes," Mrs. Dark chuckled and moved to stand beside her sister so that Will, with his blazing sword, was between Tessa and both ladies. "We have no quarrel with you, Shadow Hunter, unless you choose to pick one. You have invaded our territory and broken Covenant law in doing so. We could report you to the Clave."
"While the Clave disapproves of trespasses, oddly, they take an even darker view of beheading and skinning people. They're peculiar that way," Will said.
"People?" Mrs. Dark spat. "Mundanes? You care no more about them than we do."
She looked toward Tessa then.
"Has he told you what he really is? He isn't human."
"You're one to talk," Tessa said in a trembling voice.
"And has she told you what she is?" Mrs. Black demanded of Will. "About her talent, what she can do?"
"If I were to venture a guess," Will replied, "I would say it has something to do with the Magister."
Mrs. Dark looked suspicious.
"You know of the Magister?"
She glanced at Tessa.
"Ah, I see. Only what she has told you. The Magister, little boy angel, is more dangerous than you could ever imagine. And he has waited a long time for someone with Tessa's ability. You might even say he is the one who caused her to be born."
Her words were swallowed up in a colossal crash as the whole east wall of the room suddenly caved in. It was like the walls of Jericho tumbling down in Tessa's old Bible stories picture book. One moment the wall was there, and the next it wasn't. There was a huge, gaping rectangular hole instead, steaming with choking swirls of plaster dust. Mrs. Dark gave a thin scream and seized her skirts with her bony hands. Clearly she hadn't expected the wall to collapse any more than Tessa had. Will caught hold of Tessa's hand and pulled her toward him, blocking her with his body as chunks of stone and plaster rained down on them. As his arms went around her, she could hear Mrs. Black screaming. Tessa twisted in Will's grip, trying to see what was happening. Mrs. Dark stood, pointing with one gloved, trembling finger toward the dark hole in the wall. The dust was beginning to settle, barely, enough so that the figures moving toward them through the wreckage slowly began to take shape. The shadowy outlines of two human figures became visible. Each was holding a blade, and each blade shone with the same blue-white light as Will's.
"Angels," Tessa thought, wondering, but she didn't say it. "That light, so bright. What else could they be?"
Mrs. Black gave a screech and lunged forward. She threw her hands out, and sparks shot from them like exploding fireworks. Tessa heard someone yell, a very human yell, and Will, releasing Tessa, spun and flung his bright-burning sword at Mrs. Black. It whipped through the air, end over end, and drove into her chest. Screaming and twisting, she staggered backward and fell, crashing down onto one of the horrible tables, which collapsed in a mess of blood and splintering wood. Will grinned. It wasn't a pleasant sort of grin. He turned to look at Tessa then. For a moment they stared at each other, silently, across the space that separated them. And then his other companions flooded in around him, two men in close-fitting dark coats, brandishing shining weapons and moving so fast that Tessa's vision blurred. Tessa backed toward the far wall, trying to avoid the chaos in the center of the room, where Mrs. Dark, howling imprecations, was holding off her attackers with the burning sparks of energy that flew from her hands like fiery rain. Mrs. Black was writhing on the floor, sheets of black smoke rising from her body as if she were burning from the inside out. Tessa moved toward the open door that led to the corridor, and strong hands seized her and yanked her backward. Tessa shrieked and twisted, but the hands circling her upper arms were as strong as iron. She turned her head to the side and sank her teeth into the hand gripping her left arm. Someone yelled and let go of her. Spinning, she saw a tall man with a shock of untidy ginger hair staring at her with a reproachful expression, his bleeding left hand cradled against his chest.
"Will!" he shouted. "Will! She bit me!"
"Did she, Henry?" Will, looking amused as usual, appeared like a summoned spirit from the chaos of smoke and flames. Behind him, Tessa could see the second of his companions, a muscular, brown-haired young man holding a struggling Mrs. Dark. Mrs. Black was a dark, humped shape on the ground. Will raised an eyebrow in Tessa's direction.
"It's bad form to bite," he informed her. "Rude, you know. Hasn't anyone ever told you that?"
"It's also rude to go about grabbing at ladies you haven't been introduced to," Tessa said stiffly. "Hasn't anyone told you that?" The ginger-haired man whom Will had called Henry shook his bleeding hand with a rueful smile. He had a nice sort of face, Tessa thought. She almost felt guilty for having bitten him.
"Will, look out!"
the brown-haired man shouted. Will spun as something flew through the air, narrowly missed Henry's head, and crashed into the wall behind Tessa. It was a large brass cog, and it hit the wall with such force that it stuck there like a marble wedged into a bit of pastry. Tessa whirled and saw Mrs. Black advancing toward them, her eyes burning like coal in her crumpled white face. Black licks of flame splayed up around the hilt of the sword that protruded from her chest.
"Damn!"
Will reached for the hilt of another blade wedged through the belt at his waist.
"I thought we'd put that thing down."
Baring her teeth, Mrs. Black lunged. Will leapt out of the way, but Henry wasn't quite as fast. She struck him and knocked him backward. Clinging on like a tick, she rode him to the ground, snarling, her claws sinking into his shoulders as he yelled. Will whirled, the blade now in his hand. Raising it, he shouted, "Uriel!" And it flared up suddenly in his grip like a blazing torch. Tessa fell back against the wall as he whipped the blade downward. Mrs. Black reared back, her claws out, reaching for him. And the blade sheared neatly through her throat. Completely severed, her head struck the ground, rolling and bumping, as Henry, yelling in disgust and soaked in blackish blood, shoved the remains of her body off him and scrambled to his feet. A terrible scream tore through the room.
"No!"
The cry had come from Mrs. Dark. The brown-haired man holding her let go with a sudden cry as blue fire shot from her hands and eyes. Yelling in pain, he fell to the side as she tore away from him and advanced on Will and Tessa, Mrs. Dark's eyes flaming like black torches. She was hissing words in a language that Tessa had never heard. It sounded like crackling flames. Raising a hand, the woman flung what looked like a bolt of lightning toward Tessa. With a cry, Will sprang in front of her, his glowing blade extended. The lightning ricocheted off the blade and struck one of the stone walls, which glowed with a sudden strange light.
"Henry!" Will shouted without turning. "If you could remove Miss Gray to a place of safety, soon!"
Henry's bitten hand came down on Tessa's shoulder as Mrs. Dark flung another sheet of lightning toward her.
"Why is she trying to kill me?" Tessa thought dizzily. "Why not Will?"
And then, as Henry pulled her toward him, more light sheared off Will's blade, refracting into a dozen blazing shards of brightness. For a moment, Tessa stared, caught by the unlikely beauty of it. And then she heard Henry shout, telling her to drop to the floor, but it was too late. One of the blazing shards had caught her shoulder with incredible force. It was like being struck by a hurtling train. She was knocked free of Henry's grasp, lifted and flung backward. Her head struck the wall with blinding force. She was conscious only briefly of Mrs. Dark's high screeching laughter before the world went away. 3. The Institute. Love, hope, fear, faith. These make humanity. These are its sign and note and character. Robert Browning. In the dream, Tessa lay once again tied to the narrow brass bed in the dark house. The sisters leaned over her, clacking pairs of long knitting needles and laughing in shrill, high-pitched voices. As Tessa watched, their features changed, their eyes sinking into their heads, their hair falling out, and stitches appearing across their lips, sewing them shut. Tessa shrieked voicelessly, but they did not seem to hear. The sisters vanished entirely then, and Aunt Harriet was standing over Tessa, her face flushed with fever as it had been during the terrible illness that had killed her. She looked at Tessa with great sadness.
"I tried," she said. "I tried to love you. But it isn't easy to love a child that isn't human in the least."
"Not human?" said an unfamiliar female voice.
"Well, if she isn't human, Enoch, what is she?"
The voice sharpened in impatience.
"What do you mean you don't know? Everyone's something. This girl can't be nothing at all."
Tessa woke with a cry, her eyes flying open, and found herself staring at shadows. Darkness clustered about her thickly. She could barely hear the murmur of voices through her panic, and struggled into a sitting position, kicking away blankets and pillows. Dimly, she recognized that the blanket was thick and heavy, not the thin, braided one that belonged to the dark house. She was in a bed, just as she had dreamed, in a great stone room, and there was hardly any light. She heard the rasp of her own breath as she turned, and a scream forced its way out of her throat. The face from her nightmare hovered in the darkness before her, a great white moon of a face, its head shaved bald, smooth as marble. Where the eyes should have been, there were only indentations in the flesh, not as if the eyes had been ripped out, but as if they had never grown there at all. The lips were banded with black stitches, the face scrawled with black marks like the ones on Will's skin, though these looked as if they had been cut there with knives. She screamed again and scrabbled backward, half falling off the bed. She hit the cold stone floor and the fabric of the white nightdress she was wearing. Someone must have put it on her while she was unconscious, ripped at the hem as she scrambled to her feet.
"Miss Gray?"
Someone was calling her name, but in her panic she knew only that the voice was unfamiliar. The speaker was not the monster who stood staring at her from the bedside, its scarred face impassive. It had not moved when she did,
and though it showed no signs of pursuing her, she began to back away, carefully, feeling behind herself for a door. The room was so dim she could see only that it was roughly oval, the walls and floor all of stone. The ceiling was high enough to be in black shadow, and there were long windows across the opposite wall, the sort of arched windows that might have belonged in a church. Very little light filtered through them. It looked as if the sky outside was dark.
Teresa Gray.
She found the door, the metal handle. Turning, she seized on it thankfully and pulled. Nothing happened. A sob rose up in her throat.
Miss Gray,
the voice said again, and suddenly the room was flooded with light, a sharp white-silver light that she recognized.
Miss Gray, I am sorry. It was not our intention to frighten you.
The voice was a woman's, still unfamiliar, but youthful and concerned.
Miss Gray, please.
Tessa turned slowly and put her back against the door. She could see clearly now. She was in a stone room whose central focus was a large four-poster bed, its velvet coverlet now rucked and hanging sideways where she had dragged it off the mattress. Tapestry curtains were pulled back, and there was an elegant tapestry rug on the otherwise bare floor. In fact, the room itself was fairly bare. There were no pictures or photographs hanging on the wall, no ornaments cluttering the surfaces of the dark wood furniture. Two chairs stood facing each other near the bed, with a small tea table between them. A Chinese screen in one corner of the room hid what were probably a bathtub and washstand. Beside the bed stood a tall man who wore robes like a monk's, of a long, coarse, parchment-colored material. Red-brown runes circled the cuffs and hem. He carried a silver staff, its head carved in the shape of an angel and runes decorating its length. The hood of his robe was down, leaving bare his scarred, white, blinded face. Beside him stood a very small woman, almost child-size, with thick brown hair knotted at the nape of her neck, and a neat, clever little face with bright dark eyes like a bird's. She wasn't pretty exactly, but there was a calm, kindly look on her face that made the ache of panic in Tessa's stomach ease slightly, though she couldn't have said exactly why. In her hand she held a glowing white stone like the one Will had held at the dark house. Its light blazed out between her fingers, illuminating the room.
"Miss Gray," she said, "I am Charlotte Branwell, head of the London Institute, and beside me is Brother Enoch."
"What kind of monster is he?" Tessa whispered. Brother Enoch said nothing. He was entirely expressionless.
"I know there are monsters on this earth," said Tessa. "You cannot tell me otherwise. I have seen them."
"I would not want to tell you otherwise," said Mrs. Branwell. "If the world were not full of monsters, there would be no need for shadow hunters."
Shadow hunter.
What the Dark Sisters had called Will Herondale.
Will.
"I was... Will was with me," said Tessa, her voice shaking. "In the cellars, Will said..."
She broke off and cringed inwardly. She should not have called Will by his Christian name. It implied an intimacy between them that did not exist.
"Where is Mr. Herondale?"
"He's here," Mrs. Branwell said calmly. "In the Institute."
"Did he bring me here as well?" Tessa whispered.
"Yes, but there's no need to look betrayed, Miss Gray.
You had struck your head quite hard, and Will was concerned about you. Brother Enoch, though his looks might frighten you, is a skilled practitioner of medicine. He has determined that your head injury is slight, and in the main you are suffering from shock and nervous anxiety. In fact, it might be for the best if you sat down now. Hovering barefoot by the door like that will only give you a chill and do you little good."
"You mean because I can't run," Tessa said, licking her dry lips. "I can't get away."
"If you demand to get away, as you put it, after we have talked, I will let you go," said Mrs. Branwell. "The Nephilim do not trap downworlders under duress. The Accords forbid it." The Accords? Mrs. Branwell hesitated, then turned to Brother Enoch and said something to him in a low voice. Much to Tessa's relief, he drew up the hood of his parchment-colored robes, hiding his face. A moment later, he was moving toward Tessa. She stepped back hurriedly, and he opened the door, pausing only for a moment on the threshold. In that moment, he spoke to Tessa. Or perhaps spoke was not the word for it. She heard his voice inside her head, rather than outside it.
"You are Eidolon, Teresa Gray, shape-changer, but not of a sort that is familiar to me. There is no demon's mark on you."
Shape-changer. He knew what she was. She stared at him, her heart pounding as he went through the door and closed it behind him. Tessa knew somehow that if she were to run to the door and try the handle, she would once again find it locked. But the urge to escape had left her. Her knees felt as if they had turned to water. She sank down in one of the large chairs by the bed. "What is it?" Mrs. Branwell asked, moving to sit in the chair opposite Tessa's. Her dress hung so loosely on her small frame it was impossible to tell if she wore a corset beneath it, and the bones in her small wrists were like a child's. "What did he say to you?" Tessa shook her head, gripping her hands together in her lap so that Mrs. Branwell could not see her fingers trembling. Mrs. Branwell looked at her keenly. "First," she said, "please call me Charlotte, Miss Gray. Everyone in the Institute does. We shadow hunters are not so formal as most." Tessa nodded, feeling her cheeks flush. It was hard to tell how old Charlotte was. She was so small that she looked quite young indeed. But her air of authority made her seem older, old enough that the idea of calling her by her Christian name seemed very odd. Still, as Aunt Harriet would have said, when in Rome. "Charlotte," Tessa said experimentally. With a smile, Mrs. Branwell, Charlotte, leaned back slightly in her chair, and Tessa saw with some surprise that she had dark tattoos. A woman with tattoos. Her marks were like the ones Will bore, visible on her wrists below the tight cuffs of her dress, with one like an eye on the back of her left hand. "Second, let me tell you what I already know about you, Teresa Gray." She spoke in the same calm tone she'd had before, but her eyes, though still kind, were sharp as pins. "You're American. You came here from New York City because you were following your brother, who had sent you a steamship ticket. His name is Nathaniel." Tessa sat frozen. "How do you know all this?" "I know that Will found you in the Dark Sister's house," Charlotte said. "I know that you claimed someone named the Magister was coming for you. I know that you have no idea who the Magister is. And I know that in a battle with the Dark Sisters you were rendered unconscious and brought here." Charlotte's words were like a key unlocking a door. Suddenly Tessa remembered. Remembered running with Will down the corridor. Remembered the metal doors and the room full of blood on the other side. Remembered Mrs. Black, her head severed. Remembered Will flinging his knife.
"Mrs. Black," she whispered.
"Dead," said Charlotte. "Very." She settled her shoulders against the back of the chair. She was so slight that the chair rose up high above her as if she were a child sitting in a parent's chair. "And Mrs. Dark?" "Gone. We searched the whole house and the nearby area, but found no trace of her." "The whole house?" Tessa's voice shook very slightly. "And there was no one in it? No one else alive or dead?" "We did not find your brother, Miss Gray," Charlotte said. Her tone was gentle. "Not in the house, nor in any of the surrounding buildings."
"You were looking for him?"
Tessa was bewildered.
"We did not find him," Charlotte said again, "but we did find your letters."
My letters? The letters you wrote to your brother and never sent, said Charlotte, folded under your mattress.
You read them?
We had to read them, said Charlotte in the same gentle tone. I apologize for that. It is not often that we bring a downworlder into the Institute, or anyone who is not a shadow hunter. It represents a great risk to us. We had to know that you were not a danger.
Tessa turned her head to the side. There was something horribly violating about this stranger having read her inmost thoughts. All the dreams and hopes and fears she'd poured forth, not thinking anyone would ever see them. The backs of her eyes stung. Tears were threatening, and she willed them back, furious with herself, with everything.
You're trying not to cry, Charlotte said. I know that when I do that myself, it sometimes helps to look at a bright light directly. Try the witch light.
Tessa moved her gaze to the stone in Charlotte's hand and gazed at it fixedly. The glow of it swelled up in front of her eyes like an expanding sun.
So, she said, fighting past the tightness in her throat,
you have decided I am not a danger, then?
Perhaps only to yourself, said Charlotte.
A power such as yours, the power of shape-shifting. It is no wonder the Dark Sisters wanted to get their hands on you. Others will as well.
Like you do? Tessa said.
Or are you going to pretend that you've let me into your precious Institute simply out of charity?
A look of hurt flashed across Charlotte's face.
It was brief, but it was real, and it did more to convince Tessa that she might have been wrong about Charlotte than anything the other woman could have said.
It is not charity, she said. It is my vocation, our vocation.
Tessa simply looked at her blankly.
Perhaps, Charlotte said, it would be better if I explained to you what we are and what we do.
Nephilim, said Tessa. That's what the Dark Sisters called Mr. Herondale. She pointed at the dark markings on Charlotte's hand.
You're one as well, aren't you? Is that why you have those markings?
Charlotte nodded. I am one of the Nephilim, the Shadow Hunters. We are a race, if you will, of people with special abilities. We are stronger and swifter than most humans. We are able to conceal ourselves with magics called glamours. And we are especially skilled at killing demons.
Demons? You mean like Satan?
Demons are evil creatures. They travel great distances to come to this world and feed upon it. They would ravage it into ashes and destroy its inhabitants if we did not prevent it. Her voice was intent. As it is the job of the human police to protect the citizenry of the city from one another, it is our job to protect them from demons and other supernatural dangers. When there are crimes that affect the shadow world, when the law of our world is broken, we must investigate. We are bound by the law, in fact, to make inquiries even into the rumor of Covenant law being contravened. Will told you about the dead girl he found in the alley. She was the only body, but there have been other disappearances, dark rumors of mundane boys and girls vanishing off the city's poorest streets. Using magic to murder human beings is against the law, and therefore a matter for our jurisdiction.
Mr. Herondale seems awfully young to be a sort of policeman.
Shadow hunters grow up quickly, and Will did not investigate alone. Charlotte didn't sound as if she wished to elaborate.
That is not all we do.
We safeguard the Covenant law and uphold the Accords, the laws that govern peace among downworlders.
Will had used that word as well.
Downworld? Is that a place?
A downworlder is a being, a person, who is part supernatural in origin. Vampires, werewolves, fairies, warlocks. They are all downworlders.
Tessa stared. Fairies were a children's tale, and vampires the stuff of penny dreadfuls.
Those creatures exist?
You are a downworlder, Charlotte said. Brother Enoch confirmed it. We simply don't know of what sort.
You see, the kind of magic you can do, your ability, it isn't something an ordinary human being could do. Neither is it something one of us, a shadow hunter, could do. Will thought you were most likely a warlock, which is what I would have guessed myself. But all warlocks have some attribute that marks them as warlocks. Wings, or hooves, or webbed toes, or, as you saw in the case of Mrs. Black, taloned hands. But you, you're completely human in appearance. And it is clear from your letters that you know, or believe, both of your parents to be human.
Human?
Tessa stared. Why wouldn't they have been human? Before Charlotte could answer, the door opened, and a slender, dark-haired girl in a white cap and apron came in, carrying a tea tray, which she set down on the table between them.
Sophie, Charlotte said, sounding relieved to see the girl.
Thank you. This is Miss Gray. She will be a guest of ours this evening. Sophie straightened, turned to Tessa, and bobbed a curtsy.
Miss, she said.
But the novelty of being curtsied to was lost on Tessa as Sophie raised her head and her full face became visible. She ought to have been very pretty. Her eyes were a luminous dark hazel, her skin smooth, her lips soft and delicately shaped. But a thick, silvery-ridged scar slashed from the left corner of her mouth to her temple, pulling her face sideways and distorting her features into a twisted mask. Tessa tried to hide the shock on her own face, but she could see as Sophie's eyes darkened that it hadn't worked.
Sophie, Charlotte said, did you bring in that dark red dress earlier, as I asked? Can you have it brushed and sponged for Tessa?
She turned back to Tessa as the maid nodded and went to the wardrobe. I took the liberty of having one of our Jessamine's old dresses made over for you. The clothes you were wearing were ruined.
Much obliged, Tessa said stiffly. She hated having to be grateful.
The sisters had pretended they were doing her favors, and look how that had turned out.
Miss Gray, Charlotte looked at her earnestly. Shadow hunters and downworlders are not enemies. Our accord may be an uneasy one, but it is my belief that downworlders are to be trusted, that indeed they hold the key to our eventual success against the demon realms. Is there something I can do to show you that we do not plan to take advantage of you?
Tessa took a deep breath. When the Dark Sisters first told me about my power, I thought they were mad, she said. I told them such things didn't exist. Then I thought I was trapped in some sort of nightmare where they did. But then Mr. Herondale came, and he knew of magic and had that glowing stone, and I thought, here is someone who might help me. She looked up at Charlotte. But you do not seem to know why I am the way I am, or even what I am, and if even you do not... It can be difficult to learn how the world truly is, to see it in its true shape and form, Charlotte said. Most human beings never do. Most could not bear it. But I have read your letters, and I know that you are strong, Miss Gray. You have withstood what might have killed another young girl, downworlder or not.
I didn't have a choice. I did it for my brother. They would have murdered him.
Some people, Charlotte said, would have let that happen. But I know from reading your own words that you never even considered that. She leaned forward.
Have you any idea where your brother is? Do you think he is most likely dead?
Tessa sucked in a breath.
Mrs. Branwell.
Sophie, who had been attending to the hem of a wine-red dress with a brush, looked up and spoke with a reproachful tone that surprised Tessa. It was not the place of servants to correct their employers. The books she'd read had made that very clear. But Charlotte only looked rueful.
"Sophie is my good angel," she said. "I tend to be a little too blunt.
I thought there might be something you knew, something that wasn't in your letters, that might give us knowledge of his whereabouts." Tessa shook her head. The Dark Sisters told me he was imprisoned in a safe location. I assume he is still there, but I have no idea how to find him.
Then you should stay here at the Institute until he can be located.
I don't want your charity, Tessa said mulishly. I can find another lodging place.
It would not be charity. We are bound by our own laws to help and aid downworlders. To send you away with nowhere to go would break the accords, which are important rules we must abide by.
And you wouldn't ask for anything in return. Tessa's voice was bitter. You won't ask me to use my ability? You won't require me to change?
If, Charlotte said, you do not wish to use your power, then no, we will not force you to. Though I do believe you yourself might benefit from learning how it might be controlled and used.
No!
Tessa's cry was so loud that Sophie jumped and dropped her brush. Charlotte glanced over at her and then back at Tessa. She said, as you wish, Miss Gray.
There are other ways you could assist us. I'm sure there's much you know that was not contained in your letters, and in return, we could help you to search for your brother.
Tessa's head went up. You would do that? You have my word.
Charlotte stood up. Neither of them had touched the tea on its tray.
Sophie, if you could help Miss Gray dress and then bring her in to dinner?
Dinner? After hearing such a deal about Nephilim and Downworld and fairies and vampires and demons, the prospect of dinner was almost shocking in its ordinariness.
Certainly. It's nearly 7 o'clock.
You've already met Will. You can meet everyone else.
Perhaps you'll see that we're to be trusted.
And with a brisk nod, Charlotte left the room. As the door closed after her, Tessa shook her head mutely. Aunt Harriet had been bossy, but she'd had nothing on Charlotte Branwell.
She has a strict manner, but she's really very kind, Sophie said, laying out on the bed the dress Tessa was meant to wear. I've never known anyone with a better heart.
Tessa touched the sleeve of the dress with the tip of her finger. It was dark red satin, as Charlotte had said, with black moiré ribbon trim around the waist and hem. She had never worn anything so nice.
Would you like me to help you get dressed for dinner, miss?
Sophie asked. Tessa remembered something Aunt Harriet had always said, that you could know a man not by what his friends said about him, but by how he treated his servants. If Sophie thought Charlotte had a good heart, then perhaps she did.
She raised her head. Much obliged, Sophie. I believe I would.
Tessa had never had anyone assist her in getting dressed before, other than her aunt. Though Tessa was slender, the dress had clearly been made for a smaller girl, and Sophie had to lace Tessa's stays tightly to make it fit. She clucked under her breath while she did it.
"Mrs. Branwell doesn't believe in tight lacing," she explained. "She says it causes nervous headaches and weakness, and a shadow hunter can't afford to be weak. But Miss Jessamine likes the waists of her dresses very small, and she does insist."
"Well," said Tessa, a little breathless, "I'm not a shadow hunter, anyway."
"There is that," Sophie agreed, doing up the back of the dress with a clever little button hook. "There. What do you think?"
Tessa looked at herself in the mirror and was taken aback. The dress was too small on her and had clearly been designed to fit closely to the body as it was. It clung almost shockingly to her figure down to the hips, where it swelled into gathers in the back draped over a modest bustle. The sleeves were turned back, showing frills of champagne lace at the cuffs. She looked older, she thought, not the tragic scarecrow she had looked in the Dark House, but not someone entirely familiar to herself, either.
"What if one of the times I changed, when I turned back into myself, I didn't do it quite right? What if this isn't even my true face?" The thought sent such a bolt of panic through her that she felt as if she might faint.
You are a little pale,
Sophie said, examining Tessa's reflection with a judicious gaze. She didn't appear particularly shocked by the dress's tightness, at least.
You could try pinching your cheeks a bit